Join me in the book of Mark, 11th chapter. Thank you for that, Ruth. Thank you very much. Thank you. You're welcome. Join me in the 11th chapter, the 12th verse, and as you're headed that way, I want to remind you of the title I've already alluded to here earlier in the service, Preparing for Maturity. Mark 11, 12 through 21. I'll actually read through 21. The next day, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went to find out if it had any fruit. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves, because it was not in season for figs. Then he said to the tree, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard him say it. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple area and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, "Is it not written, 'My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations'? But you have made it a den of robbers." The chief priests and the teachers of the law heard this and began to look for a way to kill him, for they feared him because the whole crowd was amazed at his teaching. When evening came, they went out of the city. In the morning, as they went along, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots. Peter remembered and said to Jesus, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree you cursed has withered." We will end our reading there, and I pray always, as always, that the Lord would bless us in our time here, in the reading and the hearing of the word. Jesus was hungry. Does this strike you as odd that Jesus, God, was hungry? Please remember that Jesus was fully man, while at the same time fully God. Something we have a very difficult time in explaining fully, but it is something we believe that we must acknowledge. As a man, just like you and I, Jesus grew hungry and he had to eat. And being hungry, he looked and noticed off in the distance the fig tree. And so he went to the fig tree to pick some fruit to alleviate his hunger. But what did he find? He found a tree in leaf, but no fruit. And as Mark records, no fruit because it was not in season. But then Jesus does something as well as odd. He pronounced a curse on the tree. Verse 14, we read, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." Was Jesus being unreasonable? I mean, here we have a tree that it is acknowledged that it is not seasoned for its fruit. But yet he pronounced a curse upon the tree. And as we read later, they went by the next day, and Peter noticed that indeed the tree had withered. So was Jesus being unreasonable here? Well, no, not at all, and let me explain. First of all, he's God. And he has certain abilities and allowances, and he made the tree. He knows the season, etc., etc., etc. But let's be a little bit more practical here in our explanation as well as acknowledging him being God. The fruit of a fig tree ripens in about June to July. Depending on the region, it could be a little earlier, a little later. The account that we're reading of here was probably in April, maybe even over into May. So, yes, it's true that it was not in season for the fruit to be fully ripened. But for there to be fruit ripe in June, Should there not have been evidence of fruit in May? Yes, of course, there should have been. And here is the point of this parable. Authors call it an action parable. It's not only in words, but it is an action. But here is the point of this parable. Evidence. Simply the word evidence. The fig tree did not show evidence that it would bear mature fruit at the appointed time. When Jesus saw the fig tree, it had no fruit at all. So for it to bear fruit in June or July, at this time here, there should have been evidence of fruit hanging from its limbs. I couldn't help but to think of our own crops around here, and tomato sandwiches came to mind. Sorry. I heard the back here. But think of this in the same light. If I went over to David Side's house, thinking of those tomato sandwiches that I was going to enjoy in July, I visited him in June. Should there not be evidence on those plants of something yet to come? Certainly. You see, the fig tree lacked evidence of preparation for a future appointed time. Young fruit was not present. So if the young fruit was not present here, there's no way mature fruit is going to be present later. And what made things worse here for this little fig tree is that it presented the illusion that it was a mature tree. We read here that Jesus went to the tree in leaf, and when he reached it, he found nothing but leaves. Visually, externally, from the eye, the tree looked as though it could produce fruit. But fruit was not present. So internally, the mystical thing that happens in a plant that produces fruit was not happening. Externally, it looked fine. But the lack of fruit revealed its true nature. The tree lacked the true evidence that it was actually a fig tree. It looked like a fig tree, but without fruit, it truly was not a fig-producing tree. I hope you're beginning to see the point of the parable. Now let's turn our attention to the temple. And you may be asking, what does the fig tree parable have to do with Jesus clearing the temple? If I gave you a few moments, you could probably apply the same teaching here. But let's walk through it. Look with me again at verse 15. On reaching Jerusalem, Jesus entered the temple area and began driving out those who were buying and selling there. He overturned the tables of the money changers and the benches of those selling doves, and would not allow anyone to carry merchandise through the temple courts. And as he taught them, he said, "Is it not written, 'My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations,' but you have turned it into a den of robbers?" First of all, what is the purpose of the temple? What was the purpose of the temple? Well, you can go back into the Old Testament and there's pages and pages and pages that describe the temple. But in short, the temple was a place where the people went to meet with God. It is a place they went to offer sacrifices to God in line with the Levitical law given them. And so according to their tradition, according to the teaching, they would go to the temple to meet with God. Jesus referred to the temple as a house of prayer. So here we're combining the prayer associated with the meeting with God. And so here, prayer, meeting with God, was the thing that was to be done in the temple. This meeting with God and prayers offered to God brought the people of God into close communion with God. This close communion, this being brought close to God, prepared, grew the people. The temple, the sacrificial system, the festivals, all of that was to reflect God to the people, have the people come to understand who He is, and through their prayers offered to God, grow into that close, maturing relationship with Him. But as we see by the reading here today, anything but that was going on. People were selling and trading out in the temple courts. Dr. Norman addressed this 2 weeks ago as he was here going through this passage. People were even using the temple courts as a normal path of travel, a shortcut. Jesus says in verse 16, He would not even allow them to carry merchandise through the temple courts. Now we might say, oh, He's being awful picky. Great day, just walking through. No. This is losing all reverence for the temple. This is denying the entire purpose of the temple and them being present in its courts. The temple was being abused. But more particularly, and more to the point here, the people were being abused. The people were being misled. They were not being led to understand the true purpose of the temple. They were not being led in maturing in their relationship to God using the instrument, using the activities going on in the temple. They had turned the whole temple thing into a religious activity rather than true worship. Now let's go back and bring into play this parable of the fig tree. These present in the temple that day, they were not bearing evidence. They were not bearing evidence that they were being trained, that they were being encouraged, that they were being brought into a close communion with God. There was not a presence of young fruit, using the parable. There was not a presence of young fruit in the temple that day being led and being brought into communion with God. Just like the fig tree. The people in the temple may have appeared to be godly. They may have appeared to be religious in their activity. But their actions portrayed no maturity or preparation toward maturity. And just like the fig tree, they looked good on the outside. They were following all the practices. But internally, spiritually, they were really dead, just like the fig tree. Now, let's take all of this, the parable of the fig tree, the story of Jesus clearing the temple, put all this together. And as you know where I'm headed, let's look at us. Let's look at us. Let's apply this teaching to us. First, let's apply it to each of us individually and personally. Are we like the fig tree? We look good on the outside, but do we produce fruit? Do we have fruit? Young, immature maybe, but yet fruit that is being prepared toward maturity. Are we like the people in the temple that day? Are we busy about our religious activities? But our hearts, our actions, our daily lives, they are far from a true heart relationship with God. Do we come to church? Come to Sunday school? We say all the right things. We listen to the right music. We watch appropriate television shows on Sunday morning. Yet like the fig tree, we don't have any real fruit I personally believe this is one of the major, major issues of Christianity today. We look good on the outside. We like to come to church. We like to fellowship. But many have bought into the lie being promoted today in our culture. And the lie is this. Faith is a personal, private matter. And you leave it at church or you leave it at home. But don't bring it into the marketplace. Don't bring it into the schools. Don't bring it into the job place. Don't bring it into your relationship outside of your little close-knit faith relationships. See, this is a lie. And many have bought into it. How many of us daily in our lives, and again, I wish there was a mirror right here, because I wish I could, I'm preaching to me too. How many of us in our lives can confess that day by day, minute by minute, hour by hour, we live out a Bible-believing, Spirit-led, gospel-oriented lifestyle? All the time. Many of the things going on in our denomination right now. You've heard of the battles, the language we've had over the summer with this issue, with the different things going on in our denomination. If someone were to ask me, just me, to put your finger on one thing that might be at the core of the debates, I would put it here. That we like to profess a Christianity. We like to profess a Christ-centeredness. We like to profess that we have a certain characteristic about us. But yet when I read the Facebook pages, when I read the conversations between people online, I have to scratch my head and go. And this is not choosing sides, because it comes equally from both sides of the argument. I just sit back and go, are you serious? Are we calling each other these names? Dr. Norman, who was here 2 weeks ago, asked us in the Board of Trustees at Erskine to define what it means to be Christ-centered. Because in his mind and in his eyes, he has a question. What does it mean to be Christ-centered? Here in this parable of the fig tree, what does it mean to be fig tree-centered, if I can use the analogy? It means that you look like a fig tree, but it also means you produce figs. It's not enough to look like it. Folks, we cannot, we must not live like this. Our vision statement, it's in your bulletin. It says that we will live the full spectrum of life to the complete counsel of God. Do you know what full spectrum of life means? Thank you. All of it. All of it. All of it. Do you know what it means to live to the full counsel of God? All of it. We can't go through Scripture and pick out, oh, I don't like that part. Well, I'll take that part. No, that was too tough. No, that was in the first century. We're much wiser now. We don't need that stuff today. No, can't do that. Full spectrum of life to the complete counsel of God. Everything, all of it. I pray we don't resemble the fig tree. Now let me go to the second area of application. The church. This church. New Sterling. Are we like the fig tree as a people? Do we look good to our neighbors? Or maybe not. Are we like the people in the temple? We're busy. We're busy about our religious stuff. We get the meetings. We do all the stuff. We do the things. But our hearts may be far from us. Jesus once referred to the Pharisees as a whitewashed tomb. A whitewashed tomb. Think about that for just a moment. Whitewashed tomb. That means that on the outside, it may have a nice paint job and look nice. But on the inside, it reeks of death. The fig tree was alive on the outside, but on the inside, it was dead. I'd like to address the elders and deacons particularly for just a moment. And ask each of us a question. Are we leading our people, the people of New Sterling, toward maturity? Are we preparing them for the coming day of the Lord? Are we preparing them to meet Jesus on that day of judgment? When they stand before the Lord on that day, will they be prepared? As much as has been given us to do in that preparation. Are we, elders and deacons, teaching the people of New Sterling matters of the heart? Or are we teaching them to be busy in our religious activities? If the Lord passed by our church, like He did that fig tree, when He looked inside, would He see young fruit maturing? Not matured. That comes on the day of glorification. But young fruit maturing. Or would He, as He did the fig tree, pronounce a curse? Folks, this is a simple parable, but I pray that we would reflect seriously on these matters. I pray that we would rise up, that we would be different than the community around us. I pray that in everything we do, we would follow the Lord and His teachings closely. I pray that we would be done with the lesser things of this world, that all they do is distract. And one day all that will be gone. Here at New Sterling, I pray we have moved past religious activities and the things that keep us busy. I pray that we move more deeply into disciple making and spiritual development. To be honest with you, if I could reflect for just a moment, I think we have. I think we have moved past the religious activity, and we're more involved and more interested in things of the heart that spiritually develops and builds people. Can we do more? Can we do better? Absolutely. Men's ministry leader, I pray that if the Lord stepped and opened that door right now, he'd look in here and he would see all of us as little pieces of fruit. Little pieces of fruit. Some of you are big fruit. Some of you are little fruit. Some of you are pomegranates and some of you are pears and some of us are grapes. Some of us are sour grapes. Still fruit. I pray that that's what the Lord would see in us. So I ask each of us as Christians, are we preparing? Are we striving to become mature? Are we now young fruit that will one day become mature and bring glory to our Lord? I hope we are.